For the next 30 minutes, welcome to Old Testament Prophets with your host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In a moment, Father Pacwa.
Shalom. The peace of God be with you. And I hope you all are doing well. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University of Chicago. And we've been talking in this series about the prophets. We finished up with Elijah in our last episode, and now we want to deal with Elisha. Already, at the very time we saw Elisha begin his career taking over from Elijah, we see him do miracles. The miracle of changing water from miscarrying and death to water that's sweet and giving life. And the miracle of the bears coming out of the woods to punish the little boys. But now we're going to see that, as a matter of fact, it is miracle working that really characterizes Elisha the prophet. That seems to be much more dominant than his other words of the Lord. So let's take a look at that. So open up to the second book of Kings, and we'll take a look at chapter 3 first. Now, we saw already that Ahab's son, Ahaziah, died when the dum-dum fell off of the balcony and then went and consulted false gods, Baal-zebul. So his brother, Jehoram, then became the king because Ahaziah had no children. He was too young. And we see here that this king, Jehoram, has sort of qualified acceptance because he got rid of one of the signs of Baal, a matzavot, which is a stone pillar symbolizing the male fertility. And he got rid of that, but he did not get rid of the golden calves of Bethel and Dan. And for that, he was not really that good a king. And so in his reign, we see in chapter 3, verse 4, that Mesha, the king of Moab, revolted against the king of Israel, Jehoram. And so we take a look then at the geography and history. Mesha, the king of Moab, is just to the southeast, just on the other side of the Jordan, east of the Jordan, and he was part of the empire of Israel. Moab had been conquered by David. But now Mesha had revolted against Israel and wanted to have his own rule. Now, one of the things that we see from archaeology is that Mesha also describes his revolt and says how successful it was. Okay? So we also have evidence outside the Bible for the revolt of Mesha because a stone he wrote on was found by archaeologists, actually by some Arabs. And when they found it, they wanted to make lots of money off it, so they took it, smashed it in pieces, and sold each piece one at a time, so we had to put it back together as a puzzle. But we see that this is basically corroborated, as we see in the Bible. Well, King Jehoram also went and got help from King Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. Remember him? Jehoshaphat, as in the one who jumps, and jumping Jehoshaphat, this Jehoshaphat had gone over to help his father, Ahab, against the king of Damascus. We saw that back in 1 Kings 22. And now he helps again. He gets along nicely with this family. And so they go out, and the king of Israel comes south, and he picks up help from Jehoshaphat, and they go farther south and get help from the Edomites, and they go on the south side, down the bottom of the Dead Sea, and they come up from the east. Because, as we know from Mesha's stone, that he had made a lot of little forts all along the north part of Moab. But the south part, he didn't make forts in. And so Jehoshaphat and Jehoram come up from the south with the Edomites to help them. And they walk through the desert. And it's a terrible desert. But they run out of water because they're in the desert to the east. And so, this is where Elisha comes in. And the king of Judah, Jehoshaphat, says, is there no prophet of Yahweh here for us to consult Yahweh through him? And one of the king's of Israel's servants said, Elisha, the son of Shaphat, is here, who used to pour water on the hands of Elijah. To pour water on somebody's hands was a symbol of being either their son or their servant, or the host at a party would pour water on people's hands as a sign of respect. So Elisha is known to be a man who respected Elijah. And so they go to him for the word of the Lord. But when they come to him, Elisha said to the king of Israel, Jehoram, what business do you have with me? Go to the prophets of your father and your mother, that is the prophets of Baal. And the king of Israel says, no. The king answered, Yahweh summoned us three kings, only to put us in the power of Moab. That is, the king of Israel, Jehoram, has no faith. But Elisha knows that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, does have faith. And he says, as Yahweh Sabaoth lives, whom I serve, if I did not respect Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I should not listen to you. I wouldn't even pay attention to you. But I do love him and respect him. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, dig a ditch and a ditch on this wadi. That is, go into a gully and dig ditches, because Yahweh is bringing water. And so, we see that the water is brought. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, this flash flood comes through the wadi, and it fills up the ditches. And if they had not dug these ditches in the wadi, that is, in this arroyo or gully, then the water would have swept over and not left them anything. But they left ditches, and water stayed in there, and they drank it. But then the miracle goes on, because this water comes out of nowhere. And as a matter of fact, this happens in arroyos here in America, and also in wadis over there, that it might rain 300-400 miles away, and then the water just comes rushing through the gully, or through the wadi. And that happens here. But the Moabites think, oh, that looks like blood. Because as the sun comes up from the east and it's bright red, it shines on the water, and the water is red like blood. And the Moabites said, come on, they've killed each other, let's go get them. And the Moabites attack, but the people of Israel and Judah and Edom were not dead. There was no blood. So they counterattack, and they beat the Moabites. And they put the king of Moab under subjection. And they chase him, destroying towns. As a matter of fact, archaeologists find that a lot of cities and towns were destroyed at this time, just as it says here in the text. And the king of Moab finally goes to his last fortress, and he takes his own son and sacrifices him, kills him right there on the spot. And the people of Israel say, oi, if this is what he does to his own kids, let's get out of here. He's called upon his own god, Chemosh, the god who wants blood and violence and death, human sacrifice. And he's going to cause us trouble. So the people leave. The people of Israel and Judah go back home. But they've done their job. Well, this is just one of the miracles of Elisha. And we're going to see a number more of these miracles in just a minute. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back with you. Thank you. Welcome back. We're talking about Elisha, the prophet who is the miracle-working prophet. No other prophet did as many miracles as Elisha. And we saw how he helped Israel and Judah and Edom defeat the Moabites. Let's take a look at some of his other miracles. In chapter 4 of 2 Kings, we see that there was a widow, the wife of one of the sons of the prophets. Now, as I've mentioned in earlier episodes, that the prophets formed communities, and they were called the sons of the prophets. There would be one prophet who would be sort of like the father of the community, the leader of the community. And it was a family relationship and family responsibility. It wasn't just a teacher with his students, but it was like a family, a father to children. And we see the same kind of thing that St. Paul says. And St. Paul says that, you know, I'm the only father you've got in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Well, this is the relationship. And when one of the women is a widow, and her husband was one of the sons of the prophets, she says, look, you know my servant feared Yahweh and revered him, so help us, because my creditors want to buy my sons and make them slaves. So please, Elisha, help me. And so Elisha says, go and borrow jars from all your neighbors and bring them into your house and shut the door. And then take oil from your own jar and pour them into all these other jars, and they'll all fill up. And then go sell the oil and you'll take care of your debts. Now, she does exactly that. She gets as many of the jars as she can. And one of the important things about this miracle is that the limitations of the miracle are the limitations of her own faith and the limitations of her trust that what Elisha says is true, and also the limitations of her own moxie to go and get enough of these jars. Also, notice that Elisha wants to make sure she understands that Yahweh is the miracle worker. It's no trick of Elisha, because Elisha is not even there when the miracle takes place. He leaves. And so the Lord does this miracle. And one of the important emphases about this miracle is that the other people, the people who were unfaithful to Yahweh, had believed that Baal brought forth the oil. They even say in some of the Canaanite texts that Baal would rain oil on the earth. But that's not true. Yahweh does it. Yahweh's the one true God. And this widow woman learns it, and her debts are paid, and her children don't go off into slavery. Let's take a look at another woman whose troubles are dealt with by old Elisha. Elisha was going to Shunem. Now, Shunem was a little town near the hill of Moreh. Moreh means the hill of vision. So it was probably a place where there were prophets who received visions at this hill of vision, Moreh. And he goes there, and there was an important woman. Now, it says a great woman in Hebrew. Now, that can mean that she was a noble person, or that she was just simply great in the sense that she was big. But for whatever it was with her, this woman says, come with me. Come with and stay at my house and be my guest. Now, there's evidence that there were other prophets, sons of the prophets, at Shunem. But this woman invites Elisha to come with her, even though he doesn't need to, because he was going to stay with the community of prophets. But she wants him to come in because to have a prophet means you receive a prophet's reward. To invite him as your guest means that you receive some of his blessing. So she wants some of that blessing. Now, she said to her husband, I want you to make a place for this Elisha. Make a little room for him on the roof and make a wall. Now, oftentimes guests were put in a little tent of some sort on the roof. But she wants a permanent wall up there. But also, she wants it on the roof because this is a man of God and he's dangerous. Remember what this guy had done to those little kids when they got eaten by the bears. That this guy has the power of God and he's unpredictable. So they don't want him right in the house because that just might mean trouble. He's got a bad case of God's cooties. And if he touches you, he might give you some of God's cooties and then you can get in trouble. So you've got to be careful. These holy men are dangerous. So they put him on the roof to keep him out of, you know, arm's length. Now just put close enough to help. So that's what they want. And so he accepts this. And every time he passes by, he stays there in this room made for him. It has a bed and a table. That is, the things necessary for sleeping and for eating. So that symbolizes that they will take care of his needs to sleep and to eat for nourishment. So eventually, Elisha finds out that this woman wants something. And what does she want? Well, she has no children. She has this desire to be a mother, but she has no children. And her husband is old, so she wants to have kids. And so Elisha said, call the woman. And this is in chapter 4, verse 15. The servant called her, and she stood at the door of his little room. And Elisha said to her, this time next year, you will hold a son in your arms. But she said, no, my lord, do not deceive your servant. Don't make fun of me. You know, don't tell me a lie just to make me feel good. But Elisha doesn't do that. Elisha is a man of God. And what he says happens. Because we see that the power of God's word is able to effect and change history. And so he changes her history from one of loneliness and childlessness to one of the joy of having a son. And sure enough, the woman did conceive and she gave birth to a son. Now, the child grew up. The child grew up and one day went to his father, who was reaping, who reaped out in the fields doing his work. And he said to his father, "Daddy, my head! Oh, my head! He's got a headache." And all of a sudden, he collapses. Probably had sunstroke. Not unusual out there. The sun is hot and the air is dry. And so he takes him in the house to his mother, and she sat with the boy till noontime, and the boy died. And the woman is upset. Because here she it was bad enough that she had no children. Now she gets a child whom she loves, and she loses him. And so she calls for the man of God, Elisha, to come. And he does. And Elisha lays out over the child, lays himself over and breathes into his mouth. And as he stretches out himself over the child's stretched out body. And the miracle is that his own life, the life inside Elisha, the man who has a double portion of God's Spirit, then comes upon this boy. And he revives. And he has life again. And it's just like Elijah had done. Remember? Elijah had also raised up the son of the widow who had saved Elijah. So we see Elisha doing the same miracles as Elijah. Also remember how Elijah had oil pour from the little bottle of the widow woman at Zarephath. Elisha had done the same thing with a widow of one of the prophets. So Elisha is shown for sure to have the power, the double spirit of the prophet Elijah. But we're not done with Elisha. He does more miracles. So stay tuned with us and we'll be back in just a minute to continue with Elisha's The Miracle Worker. Welcome back. We're talking about Elisha, the miracle-working prophet. Now, if you open up again to chapter 4 of 2 Kings, we see a couple little episodes about food again. What happened is that Elisha went back down to Gilgal, that ancient shrine next to the Jordan River, down in the hot Jordan Valley. And there was a famine in the country. And some of the sons of the prophets were sitting with him, and they put a large pot on the fire and cooked some soup for all the sons of the prophets. Well, somebody went out and cut some other wild gourd or some other wild plant and put it in there. One of the prophets ate some and said, "Oh, man of God, there's death in the pot. And somebody put poison in here, or poisonous plant." And so Elisha said, "Bring some meal, that is, some grain, some ground of flour, and toss it in there," and it turns out to be just fine. So again, Elisha ends the possibility of death. He raised up the son of the one woman that he helped to conceive a son, and now he ends death. But that's not all. We see also in verse 42, another miracle. A man came from Baal Shalisha. This is the name of a town up in the upland country. Bringing the man of God bread from the first fruits. So he's coming down to bring Elisha, the man of God, some food. And the word bread, lechem, also just means food in general. Still does in Hebrew. 20 barley loaves and fresh grain in the ear. Okay, so he had some fresh grain. He says, "Give it to the people to eat." But his servant said, "How can I serve this to 100 men?" And the prophet insisted, "Give it to the people to eat." Even though 20 loaves of bread is not a lot for 100 men, he says, "Give it to them to eat. For thus says Yahweh, they will eat and have some left over." He served them, they ate, and had some left over, as Yahweh said. Now, this is a lot like the miracle that Jesus did. It's a lot like the miracle of the multiplication of loaves and fish, that he is able to take and multiply this food. But First of all, Elisha only does it for 100 people. And secondly, one of the most important emphases is that Elisha is showing how Baal is not the god of fertility. He is not the god who brings grain and wine and oil. But all these miracles of food and healing are to show that Yahweh, the God of Israel, is the only true God who brings prosperity and food, health and healing. Now, it's not even enough for Elisha to show this power to the people of Israel. If you open up to 2 Kings chapter 5, we're going to see how even the pagans learned that Yahweh, the God of Israel, is powerful to give life indeed. Now, the problem was this. Naaman, the army commander of the king of Aram, that is the king of Damascus, had leprosy. And in the ancient world, if you had leprosy, you were dead. You were as good as dead. And as a matter of fact, they even considered you to be the walking dead. And so, he's a leper. He had respect in all other ways, but he was a leper. And when he went on a raid down into Israel one time, they stole a little Israeli girl, little Israelite girl, and she became a servant of his wife. And she said to her mistress, who she worked for, "If only my master would approach the prophet of Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Now, this little girl has great faith in Yahweh's ability to heal through the man of God, Elisha. So Naaman went to his king and said, "Let me go down to talk to this prophet. Maybe he can heal me." So he goes down. He has all kinds of presents, all kinds of festal garments. That is, garments that would have brocade and perhaps pearls sewn in and all the beautiful things all sewn in it to look gorgeous and very expensive. And he takes him to the king of Israel. And Jehoram, the guy who didn't have faith in Elisha back when he went to war against the Moabites. And he says that, "I have a letter from my king. I want your prophet to heal me." And the king of Israel tears his garments and says, "Ay lee, woe is me. Ay vey," as Jews might say today, "am I a god to give death and life, that he sends to me a man and asks me to cure him of his leprosy? Listen to this note of his. He wants to start a fight with me and cause a war." Now, this Jehoram had worshipped Baal, the god of his mother, Jezebel. And Baal was a god who would die every autumn and then rise again in the spring. So he was a god of death and life. And if he believes in Baal, he should believe that he would bring up this man from leprosy, right? But he doesn't, because he knows Baal can't do that. But he doesn't even believe that Yahweh can. King Jehoram is a skeptic, a man with no faith, even in his own god, Baal, or the God of Israel, the true God. Now, when Elisha had heard that the king of Israel had torn his garments, he sent word to the king, "Hey, why did you tear your garments? What's the matter with you? Let this man come to me, and he will find that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his team on the chariot, and he came to Elisha's house. Elisha did not even come out of the house. Here, this great general, and most of us would see this. You know, this general is here. He's an important man. I should put on my nice clothes, my Sunday go to meeting clothes, and have a nice time and show him, you know, a lot of respect. Not Elisha. Elisha is a man of God. He's a prophet of Yahweh, the great king. And so he sends a messenger to Naaman and says, "Tell Naaman to go and wash 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will become clean once more. So just go over there, wash yourself in the Jordan River, and you'll be okay." Naaman says, "Hey, what's wrong with the water back home? I had to come all the way over here to wash in their dirty Jordan." But his servant has more faith than he does. Just like the little girl, the slave girl, had more faith in the king of Israel. And the servant of Naaman says, "Look, go ahead and do it. If he told you to do some great deed, you would have done it. So go ahead. What's wrong with washing 7 times? So he does it, and he's healed. And not only is he healed, but he comes to worship Yahweh. He even says to the prophet, "Look, let me take 2 donkey loads of earth from your country to bring to my own country because I want to worship your God Yahweh. He brought me to life. So we see that this pagan is brought back to faith. Faith in Yahweh, though, not in faith in his own gods. The God who's supposed to be the God of death and life. Instead, he believes Yahweh. Yahweh is the God that gives him life. He converts. Now we ourselves need to see in our own lives, where do we find this healing of God, this transformation of our own lives, this transformation of our own selves? Where do we find God working in us? And when we see it, let us convert to Him. Let us accept that Jesus is the one who was dead and raised back to life and who gives us life. Let us be a people that proclaims that life and lives that life, the life that comes from God alone. Thank you.